Hi, family. I'm Tracy W. from D.C. area. And I was real nervous, but the closer he got to his end, the calmer I got. Because what I realized is all I got is my story. That's all I got, y'all. And I'm going to share that. And if you listen closely, you're going to hear some good stuff. And when I say that, that's not because I think I'm like the bomb diggity, but it's because I know what has worked for me, and if it worked for me, it'll work for you too.
That's right.
In 106 days, I will have 24 years clean. In 1 year and 106 days, I will have 25 years clean. And at that point, I will have broke even. I used for 25, and I will have been clean for 25. She dropped something. When I first got here, my sponsor used to tell me, you have to learn how to share. You tell how it was, what happened, and how it is now. And almost 24 years later, I still try to do that because I like to talk. And if allowed, I could go on and on and on, and we'd be talking about a whole lot of stuff that don't have nothing to do with why we here right now today. So forgive me if I seem to be rambling, but there has been so much that has happened in my life. I may not be able to string it all together into a lovely story, but I hope you get my message. And it's a message of recovery. How it was, I used for 25 years, killing myself on the installment plan. Use a little bit, go to jail a long time. Use a little bit, go to jail a long time. I did that over and over and over again. And the last time I went to jail, I was 38 years old. And I had finally come to understand that, Tracy, if you don't do something about yourself, you are going to die. You're not exempt. And I went to jail, and it was hard for me for the first time, because jail never was that hard for me. First of all, by the time they locked me up, I was tired and broke down, and I was ready for a pit stop anyway. And then I would always go to the feds. And that was like old home week. You go to the feds, they bring you a big thing of Maxwell House coffee and a couple of cartons of cigarettes, and it was all right. And I did my 3 or 4 or 5 years, whatever I had to do, and I went right back out and did the same thing again. But the last time I got arrested, November 1991, God didn't see fit to send me to the feds. He sent me to the local jail. And for those of you who are from D.C., you know the local jail is Lorton. And it's the pits. And it was incredibly hard for me. I cried almost every day. I wasn't young. I was 38 years old. There was a whole lot of young people there, and they were smoking woodies and stuff I never heard of. And they was throwing blocks of Jell-O back and forth across the room and beating on trunks and making rap music. And I felt very uncomfortable for the first time. But it was good for me. Had it been like that probably the first time I went to jail, I probably would have a whole lot more clean time. My life back then was the beginning for me of a fairy tale life. And that may sound strange considering the fact I just described to you how I was living. But the jail I was in was co-ed. And I met a guy, who was later to become my husband. And I heard the uh-oh, and I understand why y'all said uh-oh, because we know how that usually goes, but my story is different. I met a guy who was, like, different from any guy I had ever known. And trust me, I knew a lot of guys. He was just different. He was very serious about his beliefs, his spiritual beliefs. He was a total gentleman. And he was fine as hell. He wasn't just fine on the outside. The dude was fine on the inside too, you know. And I got out. He was still in. I started sharing with people about this guy that I met in Lorton, you know. And I kept getting different versions. Some people were saying to me, "You don't want to be bothered with that dude. He's been locked up. He probably been doing them gumps and da 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 da." And then other people would say to me, one of my best girlfriends, Gwen, she said to me, she listened to me, and she said, "You know what, Tracy, pray about it. You know, pray about it and try to figure out which way you need to go." And long story short, I waited for him. He came home. We got married. We were married for a little over 20 years until the day he died. And it was all good, y'all. Yeah. It was a really good relationship. I would say that we had a perfect marriage. Not because we didn't ever fuss and fight and carry on and yell at each other, but because at the end of the day, no matter what me and my husband went through, we loved each other enough to work it out. We did the hard work to make it last, you know. August of 2013. And if you listen closely, let me just say this. If you listen closely, you will pick up on a whole lot of instances in my life where God showed up and I didn't even know it at the time. But the first thing was, every year my husband and I, we go on a vacation. We on a timeshare. So we go on a real vacation, like get on an airplane and go wherever we want to go. This particular year, 2013, we weren't going to fly anywhere. We were going to our timeshare, which is in Massanutten, like a 2-3 hour drive from where we live. We were doing that because my daughter and her boyfriend wanted to go. And they're in their 20s. Y'all know young people don't never have no money. So to make it easy on them, we didn't go away. We said we just going to get in the truck and drive to Massanutten so they can go with us and hang out with us. God showed up. Because while we were in Massanutten, even though the kids didn't even go, they flaked on us at the last minute. But we were in Massanutten. My husband got sick. Now, my husband was a very virile guy, vivacious. This dude did construction work. He played racquetball 4 or 5 times a week. The joke around my house was he had to stay strong because he was going to have to carry me on his back. Because I'm the one with arthritis, and I smoke cigarettes, and I got this and bronchitis. And that was the joke. I got to carry you on my back, baby, you know. And that was fine with me. That was absolutely fine with me because I loved him so much that I was all right with dying first. Because then I wouldn't be left with what I'm left with now. And, but he got sick. And he was just so weak. We went out shopping like we always do because I like to shop. And we were in a store and they had a couch. And he sat down on the couch to wait for me because he knew it'd take hours when you're trying on clothes and picking them up and putting them down. And when I looked, he was asleep. He had just fallen asleep. And that was unusual for him. So long story short, it turned out the next day I was going to take him. Now, the first time God showed up was when we decided to take the kids. So instead of me being cross country, I was right down the road from home. Yes. Second time God showed up, when he got sick, we got in the car. I told him, I said, "Get up. Don't even take no bath. Throw on some shorts. We going to the urgent care." We get all the way to the urgent care. He left his wallet in the condo. So, of course, they wouldn't wait on him because he had no ID and no insurance card. He was getting highly upset. And I told him, I said, "Don't be upset because I believe in the process. And I believe that God has a bigger plan. And sometimes, Tracy, you just got to shut up and go with the flow." And when we got there and they wouldn't wait on him, I think that was God showing up. Because urgent care is not equipped like a hospital.
That's right.
So when we had to go all the way back to the condo to get the ID, at that point I said to him, "We're going to the hospital. We ain't going back to that place." I took him to the hospital. Brand new hospital. What for a hospital? It was less than 3 years old, so that's brand new. We got there. They saw him within 45 minutes. The doctor came back in the room. He said, "Sir, I have some bad news." I almost burst out laughing because I'm thinking he's going to say, "Man, you on vacation. You done caught the chicken pox or something, you know." But when I looked at the doctor's face, I knew it wasn't a laughing matter. And he simply said, "You have leukemia." And my husband started crying. You know, the tears just started rolling down his face. And I didn't cry. I did not cry because I have great faith. I really do. I have great. I know where God brought me from, so I know what God can do. Because I was a wretch before I got here. And I just felt like, you know, this too shall pass. He gonna work it out. You know, it's rough right now, but we've seen rough before. I've been face to face with rough a whole lot of times. And so anyway, he ended up getting admitted in the hospital, and he was really sick. And they were so good to us. They had a couch they let out, and I slept on it, and they brought me coffee every morning. It, under the circumstances, it was the best that it could be. And we ended up staying in that hospital for 10 days. The time had come when we were supposed to get out of the condo. Two of my girlfriends and one of them's husband, I'm sitting in the hospital room, and I look up, 8 o'clock at night, here come the three of them. I didn't ask nobody to come. God knows I wanted somebody to come because I was scared to death, but I didn't ask them. And they showed up. And it was like, "Girl, you know we weren't going to let you go through this by yourself." And they came. That was God again. He always give me what I need when I need it. The blessing is that I have stayed around long enough that I'm starting to be able to recognize it. Because a lot of times he was sending me help and it just went right over my head. I didn't get it. So we stayed there. They got him stable. We came back home. They put him in Georgetown Hospital, which is an excellent hospital. I never thought, no matter how sick he got, I just never thought he was going to die. Yeah. I just never thought that. It never occurred to me. And he got so sick, and the thing is, the leukemia didn't kill him. The chemo broke him down so bad that he caught pneumonia, and he had absolutely nothing to fight with. And that day, and here come God again. It was a Sunday. Now, my girlfriends, I got an awesome network of girlfriends. They had been coming. One come this day, one come another day. You know, just one here and there, right? And I had said to them at some point, "I don't want all of y'all coming here at the same time because you got to go to work. If everybody come at the same time, then everybody leave at the same time and I'm by myself." So they were staggering it. One come today, one come tomorrow. This was a Sunday morning, and I swear to you, there were no phone calls exchanged, no texts that I know of. Every one of my six best girlfriends, five best girlfriends and my sponsor, all showed up at the hospital at the same time. My son and his wife showed up. My daughter worked in the hospital, so she was there. It was like God sent everybody that I needed to be there. He sent them because that was to be the last day. And they called me in the room, and the doctor said to me, "Do you want to see a chaplain or a minister or something?" And I said, "Yeah, send him, get him here." And they told me, they said, "He's going fast. There's one more medicine we can push. I don't think it's going to do any good." I said, "Give it to him. If there's any hope, you got to give it to him." But I also told them, when he goes, do not resuscitate him. Because that wasn't who my husband was. And some people don't know this. When you see them resuscitating a person and they're giving them chest compressions, it's breaking their ribs. It breaks every bone in their chest. And I didn't want that for my husband. He was already so weak, I already knew he couldn't come back from that. So I told him, I said, don't resuscitate him. unfortunately, my daughter, who is now 28 years old, she was about 26 then or something. I don't know that she was all right with that because she was a daddy's girl. She loved her daddy. And he passed away. I was standing right there, and the doctor told me, they said, we think that when people are in a coma like this that they can hear you. So you should talk to him.
Yes.
And my nickname for him was Honey Man.
Yes.
And I used to always tell him, you are my hero. And he would do something. I get a flat tire and I call him, I'm on my way, baby. He put the dog in the car and come and change my tire. And I would say, you my hero, you know. And I leaned over and I whispered in his ear and I told him how much I loved him and that it was okay for him to go. Because somebody had shared with me that you have to let your loved ones know it's okay to go. Because they love you so much, they will stay in limbo. They can't go where they need to go to find the peace they need to find in the hereafter. If I'm whining and moaning and groaning and he thinking he got to keep holding on for me. And I told him, I said, it's okay to go. You can go. I love you, but it's okay to go. And my husband passed. It was right at Christmas. My husband died. He went in the hospital on Christmas Eve. I was cooking Christmas dinner. The doctor had said, if he get a fever, you need to get him back here because it means he has an infection and that's not good in his condition. I was in the kitchen getting to turkey and all that stuff ready for Christmas Day the next day. Took him some soup on a tray. The sweat was pouring off of him. He knew he was sick and he wouldn't say nothing. I think because he wanted to have that last Christmas with his family. But when I saw how he was looking, I told him, I said, get up. We got to go. I turned the oven off with the turkey in it. We went to the hospital. And he went in on Christmas Eve, the 24th of December. The 29th of December, my husband was dead. On the 31st of December, New Year's Eve, my son got married. Had a huge wedding. So you can imagine what kind of state I was in. Husband dead, son getting married. I was off the chain. I was just crazy. But I'm that person who, I don't give up. I'll give out before I give in. And I kept it moving. I decided, because people had already been, now see, I go into business mode. Okay, Tracy, it's Christmas time. People done already took off work for the holiday. You need to have his funeral on Saturday. It's going to cost you more money. But you need to do it on Saturday so that people who want to come can come. Because you can't go back to work right out after New Year's and then say, oh, I'm going to be off again tomorrow for somebody's funeral. See, this is what kept me sane, y'all. That's the way I operate. I couldn't just give in to my feelings. And so I took care of all the business. I got his funeral arrangements made. My friends in the fellowship, somebody called me and said, Tracy, don't worry about the repast. We got you. They cooked all the food. They served the food. They cleaned up after everybody. People were coming to my house. Somebody came and helped me get on the computer and put the program together. Another guy in the fellowship who owned a printing company said, don't worry about it. I got you. Printed me 250 programs and didn't ask me for a dime. You know, people were bringing me food and coming. Somebody called me and said, Tracy, you know what, me and you don't hang out that much, but can I please, they were almost like begging me, can I please just come and sit with you? I just want to be there for you. You know, so I got through that. The thing that I said to people, though, when people would call me and say, what can I do for you? I said the same thing to everybody. Please don't forget about me. Because what happens is they come to the funeral, they bring food for the repast, they call you, but soon as they deliver that last shovel of dirt, it's business as usual. And people forget that when the dust settled, I was all by myself. There was nobody with me. I live in a 4-bedroom house in an area where my backyard, You can see a raccoon, a possum, several deer eating up all your stuff. you know, all kinds of animals. So I'm kind of secluded. And I was in that house pretty much by myself. My daughter was there with me, but for some reason, now I'm grieving the loss of my husband, who died, but I'm also grieving the loss of my daughter, who totally shut down. She got so pissed with me. She was so angry with me. She's living in the same house with me from December to February. We never ate a meal together. She never came in my room and sat down and hugged me. Nothing. So I'm grieving both these things. I used to play this game with myself. I would go in the kitchen to try to cook. And I'd look out the kitchen window and I could see the garage. And I would pretend like he'd be home in a minute. Because he would come home, music be blasting, I can hear the truck before I see the truck. And I would pretend he'd be here in a minute. And that went on for months. And then one day I looked out the window and I could hear myself talking out loud. You know what, Tracy? He ain't never coming back and you need to get with the program. It's over. You need to figure it out. And so I tried to continue living my life. I keep it simple, y'all. That's what they said, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. And I know who I am. In addition to suffering from the disease of addiction, I also suffer from the disease of good ideas. I get something in my mind, and it seems like a good idea, and I'm going for it, and then I'm all jacked up. So I have learned, Tracy, don't follow your first mind. You need to run that by somebody, you know. And what you all taught me was, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and trust the process. And I'm going to tell you this. I was in so much pain. The only way I can describe it, I felt like somebody took a shovel and jammed it in my chest and just dug out every damn thing that was in me. And I didn't know what to do with that. The only thing I could think of was just keep putting one foot in front of the other, keep praying, keep going to meetings, keep talking to your sponsor and your network, and tell your truth, Tracy. And if it makes you uncomfortable, that's your problem. That is your problem, but I got to purge myself, because what I know is, even with having almost 24 years clean, I'm a dope fiend. And I remember how good a hit was. And I've seen people with more time than me go back out. So I knew that I had to be very vigilant about watching what I did and how I did it and my thought process. Because, Tracy, you are not exempt. You, too, can go back out. So I held on to you all, you know, and I cried. I can remember being at a concert in Newport News, Virginia, somewhere with Cynthia. And Stephanie Mills was singing a song. I broke down. I cried like he had just died that minute. It just hit me, you know. But that was my grieving process. I didn't try to hold my stuff in. I wasn't interested in trying to show y'all how strong I was. What I knew was that all I could do was the best I could do, you know, every day. And I don't care what nobody say about y'all greasy, slimy, dope fiends. You're all right with me because you all held on to me. You held on to me even to this day. I have girlfriends that call me every day to check on me. My nephew right here, this boy called me so many times, I started to turn my phone off. Auntie, you okay? You on your way down here? But I love you all for that. Because you help me when I can't help myself, you know. All I know is that I focus on the good and not the bad. I don't focus on the people who don't call me no more. I focus on the ones that do call me. I don't focus on the people that don't show up. I focus on the ones that do show up. And I get up every day, y'all, and I count my blessings. Because I don't care how bad it is. It could always be worse, and the devil is alive and busy. I had a doctor. I have a back problem. I'm going to say this in close. I have a back problem. I went to a back doctor. He wrote me a prescription for 120, that's 30-day supply if you take them four times a day, 120 oxycodone pills. Wait a minute, with six refills. I did the math right away. That's 720 narcotic pain pills that I got legally. I didn't forge no script or none of that. So it could have been very easy for me to say, well, he gave them to me, I need to take them. But see, my mind, don't matter how long I'm clean, I don't know about y'all, I can still go back. So my mind, I didn't think about taking the pills, but I thought about selling them. Yeah. Because somebody told me you can get $30 a pill. And I was like, oh, Lord. But what I did, I had to come clean. I went out with my girlfriends, and one of them sitting in this room, so she know I ain't lying. And I said to them, y'all know I got these pills, and I'm going to sell them. They said, flush your damn pills, girl. And that's what I did. Because I don't tempt fate. I don't need to test myself and see how many days I can keep them without using them and all that. You know, so I try to do the right thing. It doesn't matter how much it hurt, and I'm going to tell y'all something. Some days I hurt so bad, I want to curl up in a fetal position. I never once, by the grace, I never thought about using, but I thought about dying. It could have been easy for me to take a handful of pills or something and just go be with him, you know? But I held on because I have you all. And I know, just like it wasn't nothing slimy I did in my addiction that you all haven't done, it ain't no pain I can feel that somebody else in this room hasn't felt. So I just want to say, newcomer, oldcomer, if you're here to stay, if you're undecided, if you've been here and you left and you come back, we used to call them retreads, it don't matter. If you're here right now, give yourself a break. Just trust the process, because God ain't gonna give you no more than you can bear, and that's real. I'm Tracy, I'm an addict, and I'm grateful. I am grateful.